From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler.
Singer-songwriter Richard Schindel returns to perform at Six String Concerts on Saturday, February 24th, 2024. He's released more than a dozen full-length albums and several collaborations, including Cry, Cry, Cry with Lucy Kaplansky and Dar Williams. Welcome back to Craft, Richard Schindel.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
We last spoke in 2018, and a few things may have happened in the world since then. So what's new in your world, musical and otherwise?
Yeah, a few things happened, didn't they? Well, what's happened in my world? I'm speaking to you from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Many things have happened in Buenos Aires since the last time we spoke. Mm-hmm. I haven't really done many gigs or interviews or any kind of professional activity having to do with my music career since before the pandemic. So I've been living here in Buenos Aires and writing other things. I've been writing poetry. I recently started a Substack project, which comes out once a week, which is very eclectic and giving myself a lot of rope.
I did want to ask you about that, and that might be a good place to sort of dive in, because your site at richardschindel.substack.com has your writing, some photography, and even your mother's recipe for sweet potato pone. So tell me about the shift to the writing on Substack.
First of all, Substack is an amazing tool. I first discovered it in all of the hullabaloo surrounding Twitter. And I was on Twitter to kind of mostly follow other writers and poets, because Twitter is or was a collection of communities when it was at its best. And it was extremely useful for those communities. Here in Argentina, it's extremely useful for lots of communities here. But it started to get complicated, and people started looking around for other platforms. I started doing that. And one of the places I found was Substack. And I didn't know anything about it at all. I'm not a real techie. I don't keep up with these things. But a couple of other musicians and writers that I read had pages there. Patti Smith, for example, has a Substack page. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. And I saw that she was posting not only text, but also music and photographs and videos. And I started clicking around, and I saw all kinds of people posting all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Even within one Substack project. And it dawned on me that it could be anything, that you could make a Substack page be anything. It could be all poetry, it could be photos, it could be music, and high resolution music and high resolution photos. And I decided at that moment, when it hit me, what was possible with that platform. And I'm sure there are others. I don't want to be a shill for Substack. I'm sure there are others out there that do the same thing. But it dawned on me that this could be a medium that I could use to just stretch out a little bit creatively, which is something I had been wanting to do, to get not away from songwriting, but to just broaden my creative practice and just throw a lot of stuff at the wall and not worry too much about having it be like really ready for prime time. Just start putting things out there on a regular basis without fail, whether it's ready or not, which is a very useful thing if you are a perfectionist like I have been, because what it does is it doesn't really give you the wiggle room. That schedule of once a week doesn't really give me the room anyway to procrastinate, to put something off, to wait until I think it's better, right. Which is just not any way to go through life. So
when I looked at it, I thought, well, this is a really interesting shift. I've seen some other folks do things like this where they will concentrate on one form of communication that's different from how they came up, where you were a singer-songwriter and coming up, and now the Substack piece is out there and you've got 12,000 followers. So kudos on that.
And well, I'm not sure. I'm sorry. We must be honest now. There are 12,000 people on the list. I think probably about half of those are valid emails, because a lot of those names that came over were from my old website.
Okay.
And by looking at my statistics, like the number of people who actually are seeing the mails I'm sending and opening them, because I can see all the statistics. I can see what everybody, I can see if people open a poem or they open a song or whatever. I think it's about half that. I think it's actually probably somewhere in the 6,000 range.
Well, if it's any consolation, there is always that old quotation, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. So, you know, who knows what's really happening out there. But right. We'll go with either of those.
12,000. 12,000 it is.
12,000. 12,000 it is. So when you're engaging with those folks, it must feel qualitatively different than say, being at a concert and people are there, I'm assuming that the concert reactions you get, the reactions you get on stage are going to be quite a bit different than the sort of interactions you have with your people on something like Substack. Very different kind of writing, very different kind of responses. Has that been true for you, that the music has different kinds of reactions than, say, on Substack?
Yes, good question. It has been much different. And I can only speak for the people who actually interact. I mean, there's most people, if they're listening to it, they don't say anything. They might like it or something like that. But the people who do interact, I really appreciate their participation. It's qualitatively different, and it's much more substantial than anything that happens at a concert. At a concert, it's very unidirectional. I'm on stage, people are in the audience, they're listening, they clap. After the show, we may meet at a table where we chat, maybe I sign a CD. But even those kinds of interactions after the gig, they're sort of limited. They have to be limited. There's right. not a lot of time. People have to get home. It's late. They got cars to drive, babysitters to dispatch. And the Substack interaction, there's no time constraint. There's no limit on it. And people write in and they write very interesting things. We're actually able to have much more substantial conversations sometimes. Sometimes it's just, hey, I loved that picture that you posted. Great. Right. Fantastic. That's lovely. Other times they may tell me something about themselves, their own lives, because my posts are very, they're not all intimate, but there's a sort of intimate tone in the way I'm in, especially in the prose. I'm not writing for 12,000 people. I'm writing for one person who's not me. I mean, maybe, okay, maybe two people, me and one other person who is sort of an ideal person that I'm speaking to. I'm not thinking of 12,000 people ever. So there's this intimate, close tone to what I'm writing that seems to activate among some readers a similarly intimate response. And they tell me similar things that have happened to them, or you mentioned the recipe. Somebody might say, yeah, we used to eat that, or we eat this instead of that, or whatever. There's a lot of back and forth going on, and I really like it. And it's a completely different kind of model than the model of being a performer.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the recipe, and what it did for me was send me off into the rabbit hole of, well, what is pone? Yeah. I've heard corn pone and things like this. This is a different recipe. And I thought, dare I make it? You know, see what happens. Because right. I'm a very northern person, and that strikes me as something of a southern dish that I wouldn't probably know if I had made it correctly.
Right. I think it's one of those dishes you can't really go too far wrong, no matter what you do.
If I make it, I'll bring it to your concert on February 24th, and we'll all have.
We'll all have pone. Yeah, I know the recipe from having grown up with it, from, as I say in the little essay, whatever you want to call it. I know it because of having grown up, my mother having made it and my grandmother, but I didn't know what pone meant either. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything. To me, it's just pone, sweet potato pone. And when I looked it up, it turns out it's an Algonquin word, which I did not know. And then I did not know that it had roots in the slave community going back to the 18th century in the South. So it's interesting to start writing something like this and have it take me to a place I didn't expect to go. And that has happened with every single installment of this Substack project. Every time I start writing, I think I know what I'm doing and I end up somewhere else than I thought I was going to be, which is great. That's the whole point. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to surprise myself, to challenge myself, to just be less controlling about the kind of creativity about the things I create. And I have found, and this is a creative problem for me, I have found that I am and remain way too controlling of my own songs. Not the ones that are done. I mean, I can't control those anymore.
When you say too controlling, do you mean the perfectionist streak?
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah. Okay, that's okay.
Yep. I just tense up when I'm writing songs in a way that I don't when I'm writing prose or even poetry, which is kind of in between prose and songwriting. Right. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I have such a long history as a songwriter. Maybe that the weight of all of those other songs bears on me when I'm writing a new one. I don't know. But for some reason, I mean, it's not like I'm not writing songs. Some of them show up on these Substack posts. But I'm just talking about my experience of writing songs. It still feels very, I feel very, very, very tense. And like, I'm just trying to control the way the song is going instead of just letting it go and seeing where it goes and then maybe fixing it later or something.
Do you collaborate with others and find that it's less of a problem at that point because you're sharing responsibility or?
No, and I should collaborate with others, but it scares that bejeebers out of me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's somebody who wrote me about a month ago wanting to collaborate, and I think she's amazing. And I should say yes. I'm gonna say yes.
Okay. well, that's what we've accomplished here is that you're gonna say yes to that one. So that's,
I'm gonna say yes to that.
That's right. Good.
Right. We got something done here today, Doug. Thank you.
So just to give folks a taste of the songs that you're gonna play, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about the song "The Deer on the Parkway." That describes your experience driving, seeing a deer, imagining it from that viewpoint. So how did this song come about?
It came about, first of all, after years and years and years of driving home late, getting home late at night, having driven through Westchester County or Dutchess County, New York, after a gig in Boston and driving down a road at 1 or 2 in the morning and being terrified that the deer were going to jump out in front of me. And never happened. They were always quite well behaved. So that's just like experience. I've just been, you know, I've been driving down highways in forests, being worried about the deer for my whole life. But in this case, I was standing outside of a hotel in Tarrytown, New York, fumbling with my plastic key to get in the side entrance. It was the Doubletree in Tarrytown. And the phrase, "the deer on the parkway graze right to the edge." That's just the phrase, "the deer on the parkway graze right to the edge," occurred to me. And I stopped and I thought, that's a good line. That's a perfectly good line. I can make something about, I don't know what it's about. I have no idea what's going on there. But it was like one of those strange things, one of those strange things that happens when you write or when you think or something just pops into your head out of nowhere. And you think, oh, wait, where did that come from? And quick, let me get a pen. I think in that case, I actually turned on my phone and I did a voice recording. And then later, I went back and I added, or I put it in the context of the experience I was telling you about before that, driving down the highways. And then the whole process of elaboration happens and trying to say something interesting about the deer on the parkway graze right to the edge. But the kernel, the basic thing was just the language. Mm-hmm. The deer on the parkway graze right to the edge.
I used to ride motorcycles and deer were constantly in my mind as well.
Yes.
And
because the result for you would have been far,
a bit
far
of a problem.
Worse.
I was out one night and very stupidly riding, I think around midnight, I was out in the country and a buck was standing in the middle of the road and we had a showdown and he won. I came to a complete stop and
oh, did.
4 feet away from him and he looked at me and he went, and pawed a foot. And I'm like, the road is yours, sir. I need nothing here. I cannot back up on a motorcycle. And after a while, he decided I wasn't worth the trouble and went off. And I said, that's the last time I'm ever riding a motorcycle at night. And it was.
Wow, what a cool encounter.
Terrifying was what I was thinking at the time. Because I thought, you know, if a deer gets mad, it's going to do whatever it wants. It's going to knock me off this bike, trample me. Get on the bike, ride off. Who knows?
And
they can do whatever.
You came to a full stop.
Yeah, I came to a full stop. Yeah. And the deer and I just regarded each other for a couple of minutes. It felt like a couple of minutes, probably 20 seconds.
That's a fabulous story.
Yeah, the deer just went, all right, you're no value to me. So.
Well, thank God there wasn't any traffic coming up behind you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, I was out late on a motorcycle, which is dumb because there are so many deer around where I live in Ohio. And yeah, that was the last time. But Richard Schindel, I want to thank you very much for talking to me today. And we're really looking forward to you coming to Columbus, Ohio on February 24th, 2024, with your concert with Six Strings. More information about that will be on our website. And have a great day in Buenos Aires.
Thank you. And I just want to say I'm really looking forward to going back to Columbus. I have friends there and some connections and history there, and I'm really looking forward to seeing old friends. And Six String is one of my favorite gigs, mm-hmm. period. So I'm really looking forward to it.
And we will work to get all the deer off the road that night. There will be a deer amnesty, and they will not be a problem in Ohio.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.
The latest EP from Chris Stills revolves around the piano, the first instrument he learned to play.
You know, most people in America see me as growing up out on the road with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and my dad, and watching him play guitar, and all that's true, but I did see also on my mom's side, I went out on the road with her and watched her do that. So, you know, my first musical experiences were actually on the piano.
Stills details the inspiration for his piano-driven songs, reflects a little more on his famous parents, and shares memories of working with David Crosby on Music Journeys, available on the major platforms and WCBE's podcast experience at wcbe.org.